SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Football Full Circle live right here on a Tuesday on FFC, all a part of Sports Grid Radio and Sirius XM Channel 159. He is the mastermind of the pigskin. That is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Early June, but still with plenty to discuss around both the NFL and the collegiate ranks in college football. Some updated ESPN FPI numbers, that's the Football Power Index, the ratings for teams and what we can expect, the projections for 2025. We'll talk about those updated rankings and the numbers and what it all means throughout this show. Continuing news around the National Football League, who is at voluntary OTAs this week. The return of Stephon Diggs. More further fallout from the retirement announcement of the Lions center in Frank Ragnow. Plenty to break down today, Lisi Guy, on Football Full Circle.
Yeah, we talked about it at the end of the show with Ragnow. How would that affect the Detroit Lions moving forward? Obviously, with college football, Ben, I mean, the rankings and schedules come out, and this is what it's all about, you know, dissecting, you know, teams' path to a potential college football playoff berth. We know about the potential expansion on the horizon, but all that matters this year is the best teams, top 10 potentially, that have an opportunity to crack and make the college football playoff. Could some of the contenders be there? Yep. Georgia, Oregon, Ohio State, and some of the teams that really need to make a statement, like Penn State and James Franklin, could they knock down that door at potentially a national championship appearance?
And we'll compare those rankings in the ESPN FPI, the Football Power Index, to the national championship odds provided by the FanDuel Sportsbook. Where are the disparities? Where are the similarities? But Lisi Guy, we start with some news around the National Football League. Not just Frank Ragnow announcing his retirement yesterday, but veteran defensive back Ronald Darby, who of course helped the Eagles win their first Lombardi, Super Bowl 52, now many years ago, and played 10 years in the National Football League, was a current member of the Houston Texans, telling the Texans yesterday he is retiring from the NFL. It's part of the news that we get at this stage of the offseason. And Lisi, something to be discussed was, of course, that June 1st designation, when some of those salary cap numbers and the dead cap numbers that are still on the books do decrease year in, year out. You have heard us probably mention a post June 1st designation for many things, a release, somebody being cut, somebody being traded, and how that would alter in that cap hit. Lisi Guy, it's why we get some of this news here early in the month of June, because once you figure out what the June 1st numbers look like, you have a better picture about the year ahead.
Yeah, and you talk about, you know, Houston with Darby and playing 10 years in the NFL, a veteran presence, but if he can't live and produce at the same level, then obviously it's a team decision, it's a player decision to obviously move on. And when you just look at Houston as a whole, right, you know, defensively, they were stout last year. The questions are on the offensive side of the ball, but knowing what you have in terms of dead money hits as it relates to the cap is important, so it allows you to make moves. It allows you to sign younger players for depth and obviously a chance to win an AFC and an NFC championship. So we'll say some teams do it great. You know, teams like the Eagles, I think, do it better than anybody. But, you know, Houston making a move and Darby, you know, a great player in college and a great player in the early part of his career, just not playing up to the same level over the past couple of seasons.
And a decade in the National Football League should be celebrated. It's a long, long time that on average, not every NFL player gets to see that length of service in the NFL. How about this report, Lisi Guy, a few hours ago from ESPN's Adam Schefter. Sources telling him that former Bills and Jags wide receiver Gabe Davis, who spent only the previous year in Jacksonville, is now a free agent, scheduled to travel to Pittsburgh tomorrow to meet with the Steelers on Thursday. Of course, the Steelers have been active in adding to their pass catchers and even trading away some in George Pickens. Last week, we got an update that the Steelers had reached out, at least to the Dolphins, inquiring about Pro Bowl tight end, although a trade not expected anytime soon. It seems as though, Joe, the Steelers are worried more about who is going to catch a football instead of the person responsible for throwing it, unless we still believe that's just going to be Mason Rudolph or the rookie sixth-round pick, Will Howard, out of Ohio State.
And a couple of the Steelers came out. I forget exactly who said it. Said that he was an MVP, all-pro candidate, watching the OTAs. I forget who said it exactly. One of the defensive players for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Listen, we know that Mason Rudolph could play and start games for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Can he elevate this team to potentially an AFC championship? That's the main question. If he couldn't do it a couple of years ago when they got knocked out by the Buffalo Bills as an 11.5-point dog. He couldn't do it and lead, obviously, Tennessee with that roster to even an above 500 record and didn't even perform at the same level that he did at the end of the regular season with the Pittsburgh Steelers a couple of seasons ago. And maybe you could say he could put up dynamic numbers with Pickens and DK Metcalf. But now with Pickens with the Dallas Cowboys, you really have to light it up. And I just don't see it. Is it any different? Is this offense going to look any different, Ben, than what it was with Russell Wilson, Justin Fields, and with Mason Rudolph a couple of years ago? No, not the way it is. And Aaron Rodgers, The longer he procrastinates or does whatever he's doing in terms of the off-field situation, that only puts the team at a disadvantage and a detriment heading into July camp.
This is not a guy in Aaron Rodgers who, of course, has been in the NFL now for two decades, is 41 years old, so he has the experience. We're not doubting that, but this is not a guy in Aaron Rodgers playing at the MVP caliber level. We saw even as recently as the back-to-back winning years of 2020 and 2021. This is a guy that, of course, has not been in Pittsburgh, has respect for Mike Tomlin, but not exactly understanding the system or the organization. Lisi, we were not together on this show last week after Aaron Rodgers was in Austin at a Mike Stud concert and took questions from fans that led to a little bit of off-season speculation. Further, he was asked, would he go play in New Orleans? He said he's too old to live in Louisiana, whatever that means. He was asked about the Pittsburgh Steelers and welcomed the idea, but basically said nothing has been finalized yet. Again, it is a waiting game for Aaron Rodgers. That is a disservice to the Steelers in general, but you can also fault Pittsburgh for not having the foresight of any offseason or succession plan at the quarterback spot. But Lisi, it just feels like the large elephant in the room that eventually, even if it's August, already a few weeks into training camp, Aaron Rodgers is going to show up. But show up maybe in the way that he's a savior for the Steelers? Not in my mind. Does he make any difference for Pittsburgh at all? Does he move the needle on a win total of 8.5? On a playoff price? On an AFC North price? On a conference championship number in the AFC? To me, Lisi, not whatsoever. So again, we wait because of the notoriety. We don't wait because we expect this to be the monumental move of the late offseason in the NFL.
No, and if it was anybody else, I don't think any team would stand for what's going on. And I understand that maybe Aaron Rodgers has off-the-field stuff going on with family members, and that's to his prerogative. You do what you have to do. But there's no professionalism in regards to what he's doing. I mean, I could see if you're dealing with off-the-field stuff, but then you're obviously fielding questions in Austin and just bouncing around in the public spotlight. What does that show your organization or your teammates that you're planning on being with in July or August that you're dialed in? You're going to lead this team to an AFC championship if he signs on the dotted line with the Pittsburgh Steelers? It actually shows a lack of care, a lack of professionalism. You would expect that from a second or a third year guy, not an all pro looking to win his second Super Bowl. And certainly if we're cutting and just, comparing with Tom Brady, act that way? Would he act in that regard? When he went to Tampa, he was completely bought in to the program.
More on FFC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. We were coming up against the break when Lisi was talking about Aaron Rodgers and what, if you can even call it, an offseason plan exists for the Steelers in that quarterback room. Again, we are all assuming, right? It might be an assumption, but we are all assuming and all arrows are pointing to Aaron Rodgers eventually. At what stage? That we don't know. Will it be pre-training camp, during training camp, right before week number one? Again, the timeline is unclear, but we assume Aaron Rodgers at some point is going to sign with the Steelers. Otherwise, they have been far too quiet this offseason. Lisi, we know what the story is in Pittsburgh. 18 years under Mike Tomlin, never a losing record, never fewer than 8 wins in even 4 of the previous 5 seasons, with shaky quarterback play at best, or mediocre quarterback play at best, or if you give them the benefit of the doubt, slightly above average quarterback play at best, the Steelers have made the playoffs. So if Aaron Rodgers is there, and the Steelers even go over a win total of 8.5, to not have a losing record in year 19 under Mike Tomlin. Heck, maybe they get to a 10-7 record and they even qualify for an AFC playoff berth. It's not necessarily like, see, that's why you sign Aaron Rodgers. Because I think the Steelers as a fan base, Pittsburgh as a proud franchise, probably tired of that very idea of middling success where you're never bad enough to tear it all down, but you're never actually elite enough to contend for championships or Lombardi trophies. And the last time the Steelers played in the AFC title game was 2016, nearly a decade ago. That was also the last year Pittsburgh even won a playoff game. So if Aaron Rodgers is there and even leads them to a winning record, that's simply not enough for the Steelers this season.
It would be so anticlimactic, too, if he decides not to play for Pittsburgh or not to play at all, that they put all their eggs in one basket and allowed this situation to play out. You would never think that a Super Bowl winning coach, let alone Mike Tomlin, that has consistent winning records each and every year, would allow this to happen under his watch. You know, it's almost like a right. call of desperation. Right? It's like, okay, we have a plan. We have a plan. Oh, no, we don't have a plan. And this is what we're doing. And again, if Aaron Rodgers does walk through the door, there's no guarantee that he's going to, you know, elevate this team to the next level. He has a greater possibility of just duplicating what Russell Wilson did last year,
yeah.
where they go 10-7, maybe 11-6 at the most, if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And they'll limp out of the playoffs after round number one because they just don't have the offensive firepower. And quite honestly, I'll say this, their defense is nowhere near where it was in the heyday back in 2016 or when they won a Super Bowl against the Arizona yeah. Cardinals. It's just like night and day. We're talking and we're under the imagination that Pittsburgh is this dominant defense when they get ripped each and every week by teams in not in just the division, but in the AFC as a whole. I mean, we're kidding ourselves at this point.
You know, it is really a fascinating point, Lisi, that you bring up. I would even argue the Steelers defensively are not nearly as good as they were at the tail end of the Ben Roethlisberger era in the early 2020s, 2020, 2021, even 2022, when they have been a playoff team despite struggles offensively and at the quarterback spot. And our guy, Warren Sharp, made this point, and I found it fascinating. There was no doubt in the tail end of the Big Ben era, right? Only played 2 games in 2019, contemplated retirement that year, came back for 2 final seasons in 2020 and 2021. The Ben Roethlisberger was not the guy that had led Pittsburgh to Super Bowls, was not the guy that led Pittsburgh to success in that AFC playoff picture. And yet the Steelers did not have a succession plan in place even at that time in the quarterback room. In 2022, they drafted Kenny Pickett as the only first-round selection that year in the NFL draft. Of course, Pickett's now on his 3rd NFL team already, as he will factor into the race to be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns this upcoming season. There just hasn't been a plan, Joe, let alone this offseason when it felt particularly dire, or any of the previous, to have a real long-term successful plan in place. You could say they had hope for Justin Fields. Of course, they didn't really give him the opportunity. Russell Wilson was yet another Band-Aid. And that is going to catch up with Pittsburgh here. And one of the issues, Joe, of why I think the Steelers are growing very tired of 10-7 playoffs, one and done, is because you're drafting 20th or 24th. You are not in the top 10. You are not in the top 5. You can't get that talented prospect that is expected to take the mantle and be the face of the franchise. And it's been plaguing Pittsburgh in terms of Super Bowl and conference championship success the last now nearly a decade.
They plateaued, Ben. That's the bottom line. They plateaued throughout, you know, the past 4 or 5 and 6 seasons. And at the end of the day, they got it wrong with Kenny Pickett. They didn't make the right call in a young quarterback. They couldn't elevate his game to the next level. And then they went with the plug-and-play type of player, Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, who are no longer on the roster. And they're going to try to do it again. And at the end of the day, you might get to a certain level, but we're talking about elite quarterbacks that they have to go up against. 2-time MVP in Lamar Jackson. Joe Burrow, that made it to a Super Bowl. I mean, they're not going to compete in the division as a whole if their offense is inconsistent. And oh, by the way, whether George Pickens was a problem in the locker room or not, he still allowed your offense to have explosiveness on the outside. Now they're going to double-team DK, and what does that mean for the team now? They're going to be completely one-dimensional yet again. They're going backwards as opposed to moving forward and having progression.
And they've made some moves, right? The big splash for DK Metcalf, but another big move in trading away George Pickens. For whatever reason that might be, the talent is certainly there for Pickens. We'll see what he does in Dallas. But they're trying to go after Jonnu Smith, if he's available, at the tight end spot. Gabe Davis will be there on Thursday for a visit. And yet the quarterback spot truly has not been solidified. The Steelers have been a top 10 scoring defense each of the previous 3 years. It is why they have contended for a playoff spot each of the past 3 seasons. But you know who hasn't been at voluntary OTAs? TJ Watt, who's looking for a new deal as well in Pittsburgh. We'll talk other NFL news, including who is at OTAs this week. That's next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
More news around the National Football League. Voluntary OTAs continue for many of our NFL franchises this week. And Joe, after being notably absent at the end of last week, Stephon Diggs was back in Foxborough, the newly acquired wide receiver of the New England Patriots. He was on the practice field with the Pats. Of course, his only year in Houston was cut short due to a torn ACL. And this offseason, especially last week in a social media video that went viral of Stephon Diggs on a boat, partying up with some nice-looking young ladies, and certainly had an unidentified pink substance in his hand. His off-the-field antics have been more of a question than what he provides to a young Patriots wide receiver room as that veteran presence. But Lisi guy, he was at practice yesterday. He was in attendance at voluntary OTA.
Yeah, it's good, you know, for the Patriots, you know, the fact that he was, you know, there and involved. But at the end of the day, is he checked in or is he checked out? And what I mean by that is the off the field relationship or lifestyle, is that more important than winning a potential AFC championship and Super Bowl title? I mean, you know, he had his differences, you could say, with Josh Allen in Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Certainly didn't pan out the way Houston thought, you know, injured last year for much of the year. And obviously he's an aging wide receiver. And again, you have a young team with a new head coach, Mike Vrabel, old, new, no nonsense, blue collar type of guy. And again, is he going to stand for that? And does he bring that much to the table? Yes, he's potentially best wide receiver when healthy on that roster right now. You have young wide receivers, can they live up to the expectation? And can Drake May take that, you know, passing attack to the way Jaden Daniels did? I'm not so sure right now with this roster. But again, Stephon Diggs needs to be checked in as opposed to checked out with the off-the-field stuff and being in the limelight. That's all well and good if you want to be retired. But when you're playing for a new head coach with a huge optimism and a 7.5 win total, you got to get real.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Joe. Again, Diggs is not in New England for his fourth year. He doesn't know this system. He doesn't know this organization. I think it rubbed people the wrong way that he was partying and not at practice. Again, Diggs not in any legal trouble, so it's not like this is something that is more comprehensive than a viral video on social media. Did Stephon Diggs meet with the media yesterday and speak to reporters after practice? No, we don't anticipate that to be the case. But Mike Vrabel seems to be a no-nonsense guy. And, Lisi, it is really fascinating, right? Because Diggs is 4 years in Buffalo. He was a Pro Bowler all 4 years from 2020 through 2023. He had more than 1,100 receiving yards and at least 8 receiving touchdowns in all 4 of those seasons. The blockbuster deal that sent Stephon Diggs to Houston last offseason was seen as a huge upgrade for the young and promising Houston Texans. Only for Diggs to tear that ACL after 8 games, not his fault by any means, but at fewer than 500 receiving yards. And now it's like he's 31 years old after 10 seasons in the NFL, and he's washed up goods. We'll see if that is going to be the case, but you would hope the commitment is back there for Steph Diggs. You mentioned that win total of 7.5 for New England. This is a team that has won 4 games in back-to-back years and yet has had a pleasant offseason. They have made a ton of upgrades, both defensively and on the offensive side of the football. Drake May was officially a Pro Bowler during his rookie campaign and showed some sparks of optimism at the tail end of last season. But it sounded like, Joe, you're not overly optimistic. The Patriots are going to sail through that win total of 7.5.
No, and I would sell it against it. Just because Vrabel is there isn't a guarantee that they're going to win 8 games, you know, in the AFC. I just don't see it right now. Again, I still think they're behind the Jets, and I still think they're behind, obviously, the Buffalo Bills. They might be even with the Miami Dolphins just because I'm selling Miami, not sold on McDaniel and that roster as a whole. But that being said, 7.5 is no joke. They run the football, and that's their MO, and maybe at times Drake May could elevate them, but he's still not consistent enough where you say, okay, when the game's on the line, I have more confidence in Drake May than I do Jaden Daniels and what he was able to do in year number one. There's a lot of question marks, and part of the answer was supposed to be Stephon Diggs to help out. We don't know if that's going to happen now.
Joe, a lot of our conversation last year around this time was, should Jacoby Brissett be the starter? Should they go to Drake May as the third overall pick right away? And one of our hesitations was a limited talent roster. Well, now that's better, both through offseason acquisitions and the draft. We'll see if Mike Vrabel can lead New England to success from the very start. Plenty more coming your way up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on FFC, he is Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. Lisi guy, during our show yesterday, we got the big news around the NFL that Frank Ragnow had announced his retirement after 7 seasons in Detroit and only at the age of 29. As we detailed yesterday and in Ragnow's statement, it's because of career injuries that have taken their toll. He is not nearly as healthy as he would like to be under the age of 30 years old. You feel for the guy that was an absolute lifer in Detroit, a key component of the turnaround in the Motor City for this Lions franchise. And yesterday, Joe, we talked a little bit about what Detroit now does moving forward along the interior of that O-line this offseason. In an offseason full of change, for Detroit. Ben Johnson is gone. Aaron Glenn is gone, replaced by John Morton and Kelvin Shepard, respectively, on those two sides of the football. Morton has worked in Detroit before, was not there last year. Shepard was the linebackers coach under Aaron Glenn, now takes over the defensive play calling. And Lisa Guy, it might not sound all that significant, right? It's not a quarterback, it's not a star wide receiver or an edge rusher. But anytime you are replacing two interior O-linemen, it might be more significant than it seems to the average football fan. Not only just your starting center, but a Pro Bowl and All-Pro center in Frank Ragnow, who, despite, of course, health issues, why he can no longer continue playing football, played at least 15 games in the regular season each of the past 3 years, and, of course, was there for the playoff runs each of the previous two for Detroit. Kevin Zeitler, the veteran offensive lineman who started at the left guard spot last year for Detroit, was only there for a year. He signed an offseason deal with the Tennessee Titans. Their outstanding right guard in Graham Glasgow, who has been a staple of this franchise as well, expected now either to move over to center or you add in the second round pick Tate Ratledge out of Georgia, or maybe a guy, Joe, a sixth round pick from a season ago out of Boston College in Christian Mahogany. A couple of options there for Detroit to fill in the spots along the interior of the offensive line, but some glaring holes now for the Lions to have to answer to.
Yeah, and you would think, and we keep talking about the continuity of the offensive line and the offensive identity, right, and they want to run the football with Jahmyr Gibbs, and they would rather rely on play action. Even though Jared Goff can chuck it, they would, if they have success running the football, they're all well and good, right? They usually win football games when they're pounding the football and moving the chains. And again, there's no guarantee that that's going to be as consistent as it was last year when you lose an all-pro center. And again, you know, just because you have players that have played the position before, like Glasgow and some of the others that we've mentioned, there's no guarantee that all of a sudden that doesn't miss a beat. Those line calls, those, the, you know, communication, the way maybe, you know, they would attack a certain package or just, you know, looking at it and just the locker room perspective is going to be completely different. And again, it's okay when it happens to one moving part. Now add in a new OC. Now add in a new DC. And now say, guess what? The bullseye is still on your back as the second best team in the conference to challenge the Super Bowl champs, Philadelphia Eagles. I can't make that bet, and I would much rather sell it and be wrong in that aspect than thinking that nothing is going to change and we're going to take off from where we were last year and be a 14-15 win football team.
And that, of course, is the story for Detroit, as we spelled out yesterday. In 2023, winning a divisional title as a franchise for the first time in 30 years. Winning a playoff game that same season for the first time in 32 seasons, reaching the NFC Championship game for the first time in 32 years as well. And Joe, so much has been made, rightfully so, of the Lions' turnaround in Motown. Dan Campbell's mentality, biting kneecaps, and all that it has meant. The career resurgence of Jared Goff, an afterthought in the Matthew Stafford deal. The offensive brilliance of Ben Johnson. The acquisitions of David Montgomery, and of course the excellent drafting of Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta and Jameson Williams and all the guys on the other side of the football defensively as well. But I think you could also say what was clearly a point of emphasis for Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell was solidify the interiors of both their offensive and defensive line. Drafting Penei Sewell instead, or Jamar Chase is actually drafted before Penei Sewell, but drafting Penei Sewell, having Taylor Decker, having Graham Glasgow, having, in terms of Frank Ragnow as well. Joe, you're talking about four guys in Decker, Glasgow, Sewell, and Ragnow that have not played anywhere else in the NFL, have been staples for this Lions offensive line, and now you're missing a couple of those pieces moving forward. That was a point of emphasis, critical for Detroit's turnaround. It's a lot to overcome. And it's funny for me, Lisa Guy, because I agree with you. I'm not fully bought in on the Lions, but I actually think the two spots of value in either conference, in the AFC, it's the Bengals, In the NFC, to me, it's Detroit at the 5-1 price, or maybe just better yet, let's compare in Super Bowl odds. The Lions at 10-1 and Cincy at 19-1. To me, that's like the value betting spot where I think you get a good earned buck for the wager that you are being made at this time in early June. The only issue with that, Joe, is I'm not betting it right now because I think both franchises have a lot of questions this offseason. Now, could I miss the best of the number by the time we're into week three, week four of this season? Certainly, but I just have too many questions at this moment, despite buying into these teams, to actually place that wager.
Yeah, and you bring up, you know, you brought up the Bengals, too, that have started slow in back-to-back years, actually three straight years, started 0-3 last year. And again, you believe that because everybody got paid that all of a sudden this year will be different, but there's no guarantee. And again, right, there's still more pressure on the Bengals. And you mentioned the other teams in the NFC. For me, if there's value, it's going to come from the bottom up, teams that potentially could surprise as opposed to the top half of each, the AFC and the NFC. And I think the only team that I would be willing, and I keep telling you this, you know, just from the numbers where they are, would be the Eagles. At 7-1, I don't think you're going to get a better number on Philadelphia. Yeah. You know, the price for them to win the conference, I think is legit. I don't think, unless they completely fall off or play down to a level of expectation and start 2-4, I don't think they're going to move. I think they're only going to get shorter. So, again, you know, you pick your spots. Where's their value? Where isn't? And when we're just talking about Detroit right now, 10-1, we're still talking about Detroit, Ben. That's the problem. It's like, it seems all well and good. 15-win football team. The mantra's changed. The MO and identity has changed. But it's still a basically losing organization that was so close to a Super Bowl and couldn't get it done, just like Cincinnati. And what happened last year to the Bengals? Last year, they were dead and buried. There's no doubt that could happen to Detroit this year, where they start slow and just never recover.
I hear the point, right? I think the history of Detroit previously of the Dan Campbell era is what I disagree with, but I think it's a fascinating thing because you lose both coordinators. Okay, what does that drop-off look like? Is there a drop-off? How does that play out in 2025? You would assume a certain level of drop-off because Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn became head coaches immediately, or maybe the hottest commodities in that coaching cycle. Certainly Ben Johnson. But you have a team, Joe, that won 12 games in 2023, 15 a season ago, where, again, on paper, yes, the coordinators have changed. A couple of pieces along the offensive line have changed, but your head coach is still there. Quarterback is still there. Your top two dynamic running backs are still there. Your top two wide receivers, your top tight end, your top defensive lineman, your linebacking core, your second. There's a lot of returning talent on paper for the Lions where we should be thrilled. But I think part of the reason we're not is also what should raise some eyebrows. We transition to college football on the other side of the break here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Live right here on Football Full Circle. It's FFC. It might be early June, but updated ESPN Football Power Index ratings are here. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, what is the ESPN FPI? Basically, it is a power rating to determine how good a team is expected and projected to be based on its roster in comparison to the strength of schedule, all of the analytical metrics that we know and sometimes maybe we do love. Is it used for anything? Yeah. Strength of schedule that ESPN then promotes as the television partner to the college football playoff. So when you see the CFP selection committee in November come on and speak about Alabama's strength of schedule or the lack of the strength of schedule for a team from the Big 12 or the ACC, they use a variety of metrics, but ESPN's FPI is certainly included. So it might just seem like a computer model, but it could be a significant one when all is said and done. In the top three teams, Lisi Guy, in the updated Power Index ratings right here, right now for 2025, hail from the Southeastern Conference. Surprise, surprise. Texas 1, Georgia 2, Alabama 3. What do you make of the top three all being from the SEC and the updated ESPN FPI early here in the college football offseason?
No shock. I mean, you know, Georgia, you know, thinking about how Georgia's season played out last year, if Carson Beck potentially doesn't get hurt, maybe their season is a little bit different. And I'm not knocking, you know, Carson Beck, you know, down, but, you know, it was a significant upgrade from where Gunnar Stockton was entering that game against Notre Dame. So, you know, you're talking about one of the most dominant teams over the past couple of seasons, Arch Manning, the potential Heisman frontrunner, and that's what you would expect. Again, the SEC is dominant in terms of the regular season, and Alabama obviously has a lot of question marks now that Jalen Milroe has gone to the NFL. Can Ty Simpson and obviously their star wide receiver Ryan Williams elevate this team? And Kalen DeBoer bounce back after the loss from Michigan? They're deserving on paper to be there, but obviously Notre Dame and some of the others now, Tennessee in the top 15 now with their new quarterback. I just think that there's parity. And the one SEC team that I tell you is playing with house money is the Bayou Bengals, because they have the most returning talent. No, I'm just saying there's no pressure on this team potentially. Not to be a homer, but if they're not going to get it done this year with the talent that they have, you got to be kidding me. So it's going to be a very dynamic year. I know there's a lot of expectations in Happy Valley, but let me tell you something. Drew Aller, it's great that he's practicing now, but I need to see it not just in a practice situation. I need to see it between the white lines against the likes of Michigan and Ohio State, respectively. It's do or die for James Franklin.
No doubt. And also for ESPN, they have the SP Plus rankings from the beautiful mind of Bill Connolly that takes into a lot of different considerations. First and foremost, a lot of that is returning production. So when you think about returning production, is it a changing thing now in college football? Certainly with the transfer portal, but still having a lot of that production back, at least at the FBS level, and certainly within your own program, is a big, big thing. Joe, in terms of comparing the ESPN FPI and the top three and the top five and the top 10, we keep going here. How about those reigning national champs? Ohio State checks in at number 4. Three SEC teams, 1 through 3, and then a run of Big Ten schools, 4 through 6. Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. The Nittany Lions, 5. The Ducks, 6. Notre Dame at 7. Texas A&M at 8. Miami at 9, and Tennessee checks in at number 10. Joe, your Bayou Bengals at number 12, the other team that plays in Death Valley, the other Tigers, Clemson. Of course, they will start the season against each other in Clemson, South Carolina. Dabo and his Tigers at number 11 in the ESPN FPI. Where this differs, Lisi Guy, in terms of our college football playoff national championship odds, and of course, the power ratings are not necessarily winning a national championship, because it takes into account how likely you are to reach the college football playoff. And then, of course, what that means from your conference perspective as well. Texas and Ohio State, co-favorites to win a national championship. Georgia, third best price. Penn State and Oregon tied for the fourth best number at 8-1. Alabama, who is third in the ESPN FPI, is sixth in the national championship odds at a 10-1 number.
Yeah, and just looking at it now, I mean, the championship, Texas has, what, 22% chance of being crowned the champion, according to ESPN. Georgia at 17. They both square off. And you talk about the first in the week one, week two matchups. We're going to see Texas and Ohio State square off in that matchup. Again, we'll get a good gauge of where Ohio State is. Again, they're much like teams that we discussed with Detroit on the NFL side. You have so many question marks. When you have Jim Knowles that bolts for Penn State, when you have the running backs and Quinshon Judkins, Travion Henderson, Will Howard, and all of those players that left from an offensive perspective, it's very difficult. We've only seen one team modern day be able to reload coordinators and talent. And that was the great Nick Saban. I don't think there's anybody else that has done a better job over the previous decade of losing players, losing coordinators, and being able to not miss a beat. And this is a head coach in Ryan Day that had multiple question marks between last year. He answered them, but now he's got another one. You got to answer the defensive side of the ball, because even though there's talent there and you're getting a veteran DC, he hasn't coached on the college level. So we'll see how this plays out.
And of course, that is Matt Patricia that Lisi is referring to. And it's one of the great things of winning a national championship, right? You're loaded. And it was that 2021 recruiting class in Columbus that was a staple of ultimately getting to the pinnacle of college football a season ago. But you had 14 guys drafted in the NFL. That's a great indication of how great you were a season prior, but of course, a lot of holes to fill, and maybe most notably at the quarterback spot, Julian Sand, the guy to take the reins. We'll see what it means in Columbus. We'll have plenty of further time to discuss this throughout the week on Football Full Circle. Lisi Guy rounds out the show. We need the studio for some interviews. Joe Lisi takes you home on Football Full Circle up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Well, I'm back on Football Full Circle. Ben will be back tomorrow, most likely with Scott Wetzel breaking down the NFL. We left off talking about college, and I left off talking to Ben about the week one matchup, Clemson and LSU, and how it relates to the national championship market. Right now, you have Clemson as a 2.5-point home favorite over Brian Kelly and LSU. You have both teams right now on the FanDuel Sportsbook. Clemson at 14-1. You have LSU at 16-1. If you believe one of those teams can make a run, it pays to bet that market right here, right now, because you're going to get a top five, top 10 win in the month of August, September. That team and that price most likely won't be there. And if you're like me that thinks the LSU Tigers have a shot to not just win a national championship, but an SEC conference title at 9-1, the 16-1 number makes sense. Now, there's a lot of pressure on both of these teams. You have Garrett Nussmeier, a potential top first-round draft pick with Arch Manning, second or third best price as it relates to the Heisman odds, and obviously Cade Klubnik there. A marquee matchup. It's going to have a primetime atmosphere in terms of all eyes on that matchup. Those numbers will not be there come September. Come after that matchup, whoever wins, and depending upon the margin of victory, those are great odds right now. So I don't like it maybe from the conference championship winners or even team totals. I think these are the best way to attack that week one matchup. If you believe Clemson and LSU are contenders, the 14-1 and 16-1 respectively are intriguing right here in June. Another number that is pretty interesting when you just look at it, Notre Dame at 14-1. We know about the dominance for the defense over the past couple of seasons. Obviously, Marcus Freeman elevated that team. I think from a physicality perspective, how they performed against Gunnar Stockton and Georgia, they really took that game to a physical offense and defense line. If that continues, the 14-1 number will not be there come second or third week in September, depending upon how Notre Dame opens. A team with a lot of optimism, I want to say, it, just in terms of the number, South Carolina will ignore Sellers 50-1. We're talking about one of the hottest teams in the nation down the stretch. Once they lost that matchup at home to Ole Miss and Jackson Dart, South Carolina went on a heater. They did it from an offensive line perspective. They did it from a defensive front. That front seven led by Dylan Stewart was as good as anybody, and they knocked off Clemson in their building to win that matchup 21-17 to potentially knock out the Clemson Tigers from playoff contention. That was a dominant effort. If we're looking for teams that could take the next step at great value, South Carolina is that team at 50-1. other teams that maybe have some life. I know Ben is big on Florida in terms of that number with Billy Napier, and you just look at DJ Lagway and that team, how they progressed at the end of the regular season, over exceeded expectations, back-to-back wins in Gainesville at the end of the regular year against Ole Miss and LSU respectively. That defense came on as the season progressed. Can you get a lot out of DJ Lagway from an offensive perspective? If you can, this team could be lethal. Schedule's not going to be easy, but 43-1 is a pretty intriguing price when you just think about national championship odds. When we look at some of the others, the one number, again, that does stand out to me is Penn State and James Franklin. I continue to go back to this. I understand there's talent there. I understand Patron Allen and Singleton are back. I get that. And I understand that the defense now with Jim Knowles could take the next step. But we're talking about a team that has not answered the bell in recent years. We're talking specifically about a quarterback in Drew Aller that time in and time again in big spots has failed to step up. You go back a couple of years ago, you look at the three games that he lost, he did not complete over 50% in terms of completion percentage. He struggled against top 25 defenses away and at home in terms of Beaver Stadium. That's a cause of concern if you're backing Penn State with the 8-1 number. Coupled with the fact that James Franklin in big spots against elite competition fails time in and time again. Jim Knowles potentially can elevate this team now to a top five ranking in all of college football. But you lose Abdul Carter, it might take a couple of seasons for Penn State to elevate on the defensive side of the ball. We'll see how it plays out. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down the NFL and college for Ben Stevens, Danny Ohlers. I'm Joe Lisi. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.